the stars, and saw shimmering curtains of delicate pinkish red, pale green, flickering white, pulsating across the sky, dancing silently, glittering, rippling, covering the sky with their ghostly glow. The northern lights, Jamie knew. The sun must have erupted a monster flare. Then the Navajo side of his mind said, "The Sky Dancers. They've come for Al." Jamie stood transfixed, watching the delicate, awesome display in the night sky. He remembered that you could see auroras almost every night on Mars, even through the tinted visor of your spacesuit helmet. But here on Earth, the Sky Dancers were rare, yet so beautiful that they made even death seem less frightful. At last he ducked back inside the Hogan. His grandfather lay still, a final smile frozen on his face. The woman had come over to his bed and was smoothing Al's blanket over him. "Goodbye, Grandfather," Jamie said. He felt he should cry, but he had no tears. He went outside again, walking slowly toward his rental minivan. "There's no one left," Jamie said to himself. "No one and nothing left to keep me here." Low on the rugged horizon, the unblinking red eye of Mars stared at him, glowing, beckoning. 2 weeks later, he lifted off from Kennedy Space Center on a Clipper ship rocket, the first leg of his journey back to Mars. Data Bank. The first Mars expedition confirmed much of what earlier robot spacecraft had discovered about the Red Planet. Mars is a cold world. It orbits roughly 1.5 times farther from the Sun than the Earth does. Its atmosphere is far too thin to retain solar heat. On a clear midsummer day along the Martian equator, the afternoon ground temperature might climb to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. That same night, however, it will plunge to 100 below zero or lower. The atmosphere of Mars is too thin to breathe, even if it were pure oxygen, which it is not. More than 95% of the Martian air is carbon dioxide, nearly 3% nitrogen. There is a tiny amount of free oxygen and even less water vapor. The rest of the atmosphere consists of inert gases, such as argon, neon, and such, and a whiff of carbon monoxide and a trace of ozone. The first Mars expedition discovered, however, something that all the mechanical landers and orbiters had failed to find: life. Tucked down at the floor of the mammoth Valles Marineris, the Grand Canyon that stretches some 3,000 kilometers across the ruddy face of the planet, sparse colonies of lichen-like organisms eke out a perilous existence, hiding a few millimeters below the surface of the rocks. They soak up sunlight by day and absorb the water they need from the vanishingly tiny trace of water vapor in the air. At night, they become dormant, waiting for the sun's warmth to touch them once again. Their cells are bathed in an alcohol-rich liquid that keeps them from freezing even when the temperature falls to 100 degrees below zero or more. Fourth planet out from the sun, Mars never gets closer to the Earth than 56 million kilometers, more than 100 times farther than the Moon. Mars is a small world, roughly half the size of the Earth, with a surface gravity just a bit more than a third of Earth's. 100 kilograms on Earth weighs only 38 kilos on Mars. Mars is known as the Red Planet because its surface is mainly a bone-dry desert of sandy iron oxides, rusty iron dust. Yet there is water on Mars. The planet has bright polar caps composed at least partially of frozen water, covered over most of the year by frozen carbon dioxide, dry ice. The first Mars expedition confirmed that vast areas of the planet are underlain by permafrost. An ocean of frozen water lies beneath the red sands. Mars is the most Earth-like of any world in the solar system. There are seasons on Mars: spring, summer, autumn, and winter. Because its orbit is farther from the sun, the Martian year is nearly twice as long as Earth's, a few minutes short of 689 Earth days. And its seasons are consequently much longer than Earth's. Mars rotates about its axis in almost the same time that Earth does, A day on Earth is 23 hours, 56 minutes, and 4.09 seconds long. A day on Mars is only slightly longer, 24 hours, 37 minutes, and 22.7 seconds. To prevent confusion between Earth time and Martian, space explorers refer to the Martian day as a sol. In one Martian year, there are 669 sols, plus an untidy 14 hours, 46 minutes, and 12 seconds. The discovery of the rock-dwelling Martian lichen raised new questions among the scientists. Are the lichen the only life form on the planet? Or is there an ecological web of various organisms? If so, why have none been found except the lichen? Are these lowly organisms the highest achievement that life has attained on Mars? Or are they the rugged survivors of what was once a much richer and more complex ecology? If they are the sole survivors, what destroyed all the other life forms on Mars? Book 1, The Arrival. Mars Habitat, Sol 1. "We're back, Grandfather," Jamie Waterman murmured. "We've come back to Mars." Standing by the row of empty equipment racks just inside the domed habitat's airlock, Jamie reached out and picked up the small stone carving from the shelf where it had waited for 6 years, a tiny piece of jet-black obsidian in the totem shape of a crouching bear. A miniature turquoise arrowhead was tied to its back with a rawhide thong, a wisp of a white eagle's feather tucked atop it. He held the Navajo fetish in the palm of his gloved hand. "What is that?" asked Stacy Dejerova. Jamie heard her strong, bright voice in his helmet earphones. None of the 8 members of the second Mars expedition had removed their spacesuits yet, nor even lifted the visors of their helmets. They stood in a rough semicircle just inside the airlock hatch, 8 faceless men and women encased in their bulky, white hard suits. "A Navajo fetish," Jamie replied. "Powerful magic." Dex Trumbull shuffled awkwardly toward Jamie, his thick boots clomping heavily on the habitat's plastic flooring. "You brought this all the way with you?" Trumbull asked, almost accusingly. "On the first expedition," Jamie said. "I left it here to guard the place while we were gone." Trumbull's face was hidden behind the tinted visor of his helmet, but the tone of his voice left no doubt about his opinion. "Heap big medicine, huh?" Jamie suppressed a flash of anger. "That's right," he said, forcing his voice to stay calm, even. "The dome's still here, isn't it? 6 years, and it's still standing and ready for occupancy." Possum Craig said in his flat Texas twang, "Let's pump us some breathable oxy in here before we start clapping ourselves on the back." 6 years, Trumbull muttered. "Left it waiting here all that time." 6 years. Even the discovery of life clinging precariously to the rocks at the bottom of Mars's Grand Canyon had not made this return to the Red Planet easy or simple. It had taken 6 years to put together the people, the equipment, and, most important of all, the money, to make this second Mars expedition a reality. To his surprise and anger, Jamie Waterman had been forced to fight for a berth on the second expedition, fight with every molecule of strength and skill he possessed. But his grandfather's fetish must have truly been powerful. He had returned to Mars at last. After 5 months in space between the two worlds, after a week in orbit around Mars, after the blazing fury of their descent through the thin Martian atmosphere heated to incandescence by their fiery passage, Jamie Waterman and the other 7 members of the expedition had at last stepped out onto the rust-red, sandy surface of Mars. 5 men and 3 women, each encased in bulbous, hard-shelled spacesuits that made them look like lumbering tortoises rearing on their hind legs. All the suits were white, with color-coded stripes on their sleeves for easy identification. Jamie's 3 stripes were fire engine red. The habitat that the first expedition had left looked unchanged. The dome was still inflated and appeared unscarred from its 6-year wait. The first thing the explorers did was to troop to the dome's airlock and go inside. After a few moments of just gazing around its empty